Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Darryl from Barbecue Superstars, and tonight we're going to have New Year's Eve special to ring in 2013, and just want to let everybody out there know that January 19th and 20th in Memphis, Tennessee, Malcolm Reed and Mark Lambert and his brother are going to have a huge barbecue school, and be a good time for you to learn how to cook a whole lot of barbecue.
All right, man, we're here at the Jack Daniel's World Invitational here. Me and Waylon getting ready to do our thing this weekend here in Lynchburg, Tennessee. Y'all come on, check out Barbecue Live. It's a competition cook school, the premier class going on. It's going to be this January. You can go to the website and check it out, barbecuelive.com. Me and Waylon are going to be there. Who else is going to be with us, Waylon?
Martin Lambert, sweet smile of mine, and we're going to be explaining the exact same methods that we have to do here at the Jack Daniel's Championship. And I tell you what, Mark's got a few tricks up his sleeve. You know, this guy is a three-time world champion. And I tell you what, you won't want to miss what he's got to bring.
We're going
to
share with you what we did at Memphis and May and Shoulders this year. We went to the Royal out in Kansas City. We got a support call out there, number 5 in Royal. Hopefully we're going to have some more calls report here at the Jack. If you want to learn how to cook competition barbecue, come on to Barbecue Live. Me and Waylon and Martin Lambert will show you exactly what we do. We're going to have a blast doing it.
All right. Now we've got a guy who's got some information about some ribs. We're going to put out there right quick.
The Super Smokers barbecue team cooked in its first sanctioned event, a Memphis and May event, back in 1986. Been cooking all these years. And with me to co-found that barbecue team is my college roommate, Skip Steele. We've cooked a lot of different things over the years, and one of the things we've won a lot of awards with are our ribs.
It's the largest one-bag rib on the market today, 2.5-pounder, and that's what we use because it has a good marbling of meat, and also you can cook it a little slower and a little longer.
One of the first things we do, now this particular slab, because the ones we buy are already skinned, but if you're going to cook in a rib competition, you're going to have to take the membrane off the back.
Well, the easiest way to do it is to take a flathead screwdriver, and what you do is you insert the screwdriver right underneath the edge of the bone. You reach in there with your fingers, and you just actually just peel it off.
Once you know that you have the slab of ribs trimmed up the way you want it, it's looking good, then you apply your dry rub.
The basic concept of a rub is very simple. Spices have resins in them, like little oils. And you take...
Well, I don't know what happened to the rest of it, but there we go. All right, now, we've got Frisky Prep. We're going to play for you tonight. Some brisket prep complete. And cooking's what it's all about. Barbecue Superstar is going to start doing a whole lot more cooking and talking about cooking and trying to bring out cooking information for all you who want to learn. And so we're going to try to run this brisket prep for you. And then we're going to talk about some chicken prep.
without a doubt, this is the mother of all mothers. If you can figure out how to cook a brisket, you can make it. I can tell you that. Not just because I know how to cook brisket, but because this is the most difficult piece of meat to cook in the contest. It's similar in characteristics to Boston butts. We cook them along with the Boston butts. Okay, so they stay in the cooker along the same line at the same time, but the same temperature. But to be able to get a piece of meat that you can cook reasonably is a chore. These are certified Angus briskets, USDA choice. If you can get prime, get prime. I have cooked Snake River Farm brisket before. Snake River Farm brisket FOB to your house is $90. And if you can cook it, if you can figure out how to cook it, you don't. I don't cook them. I have cooked them in the past. I used it 5 or 6 years ago when we were in Tryon, and came in second to the last one of them. Brisket, because I'm a better brisket cook than that. I really am. So that was in the time period, though, before everybody was cooking Snake River Farm. And what I think happened, and I'm using my own excuses because I can't believe that y'all would tell me my food sucked, I think that they didn't know what they had. I really didn't. I really feel that we were ahead of our game a little bit at that point on. We were putting in a product they hadn't seen before. And I believe when we went back to Snake River Farm, to close it up, we all want to and get it out of the way. If you want to cook Snake River Farm brisket, it is fantastic. It's Wagyu quality. It's all prime. It's wonderful meat. There's a different cooking process to cooking it, though. It's not, they're breaking down the collagen in that particular piece of meat. It's not as hard as it is doing this regular style brisket. Okay? Certified Angus beef. Buy the best that you can buy. And as you increase in the grades, grading meat, select is basically the bottom of the grade. It's very lean. And there's not a lot of fat in it. And as you go up to choice and prime, fat content within the meat gets better. That's how they grade meat. Okay, so you want to get the best fat that you can get off of it. Get to know your butcher, because you're going to want to know the kill date of brisket. Kill date is printed on the box of the briskets. We wet age all of our brisket 40 days from kill date. We wet age all of our briskets 40 days from kill date. Kill date's printed on the box. They'll say pack date. It might say pack date. Probably what it says. I'm not going to write kill on the box. I think it says pack date. 40 days. Which means this, as it sits right just like this, goes into a cooler and it sits 40 days. Now, when you get a piece of meat, it's about 15 days old when it gets to you anyway. So you're actually only going to put it in there for about a month. Okay? It has to stay in cryovac vacuum. If the cryovac breaks, you're done aging your meat. It's got to go in the freezer. Don't be afraid to freeze your brisket. If that's what you've got to do, then that's what you've got to do. There's nothing wrong with frozen meat. They'll tell you, oh, fresh meat, oh, crap. You're going to hear me say that's crap a lot because I dispel a lot of rumors. That's crap. And that is crap. Some of the better brisket we've ever cooked has been frozen. Frozen meat, you tend to break down the cell structures when you freeze it. Then when you thaw it, the cells are already broken. So you don't have to go through the process of all the tenderization that goes along with it.
Pay $90 for that Snake River.
There you go. All right. I took these three out because all three of them are a little different. And you're going to go into... I'll tell you the story about Myrtle Beach last year. Myrtle Beach last year, we weren't going to do the KCBS contest. I called Mike, we're not doing it. There was a tropical storm blowing up the coast. KCBS is all wood. I didn't want to take the Oklahoma Joe out in a freaking tropical storm and try to operate it. I had to leave. Work wouldn't let me have the weekend off. I had to leave on Sunday night. So it was just a whole lot of things. I told Mike, let's just do the Shrine event. We're going to Myrtle Beach, and we'll be done. Cook that particular part of the contest. We're done. They're begging us to cook the contest. The KCBS contest, to get a state certification, you have to have 25 teams. They had 23, and they were begging to get two more teams so you get your state certification. If you get your state championship certification, you qualify to go to Jack Daniels, which is the dream of every KCBS cook that I know. Somehow or another, get themselves to the Royal to the Jack. So, anyway, they begged us and begged us and begged us and begged us and begged us, and finally, Mike being the wonderful man that he is, worked out. He said, we'll do it. I mean, I left all my stuff home. all the injections, all the rubs and marinades and everything on it. Looking awesome. Are you crazy? He said, no, we'll wing it. I said, okay, we'll wing it. So wake up Friday morning and we go to Walmart in Myrtle Beach. I was like, well, we got to get brisket. You know, we got to get some ribs and we got to get some chicken. And they were cooking Boston bucks, so we already had Boston bucks. So Mike said, let me pick the brisket. I said, okay, you go pick the brisket. And Mike's a fairly good judge of brisket, you know. So I'm over there in the spice section trying to figure out, because my normal rubs, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to use and how I'm going to get it all together and how we're going to make an injection because the butcher's is at home and I'll have to beef broth, and I'll just beef broth and make all that and the seasonings and all. So we're going through the whole thing. And he comes back and he's got this brisket in the basket. I said, you got your brisket? He says, yeah. I said, well, what made you choose that one? He goes, the biggest damn one in the case. I said, well, why did you choose the biggest damn one in the case? He says, we're going to lose. We might as well lose then. I said, that's a good point. We're only going to cook one. We figured if we're going to do this thing, we were only doing it because they needed to have the teams in there. We weren't really expecting a whole lot out of cooking. So we had this huge brisket. It's 15 pounds. I'm serious, it's 15 pounds. It's a monster. And I like to choose brisket in the 13 to 14 pound range. Anything shorter than 13, 14 pounds, you're really looking at something that's probably going to dry up a little bit on you. So you want to get them as big. 15 is like 15 and a half pounds. You know? So you're going to find your brisket. You're going to get it in the 13 to 15 pound range. Now I like to say 15 pounds because now we're looking for bigger brisket. Oh, by the way, Mike came in. I had to leave. Mike did a wonderful job that week, that day. He converted his gas cooker into a wood burning machine, which is not easy when you're doing that kind of thing. He had never cooked all wood in that cooker before. He did it in the vertical. So he'll have it out here in a little while. He put charcoal in the pan, in the catch pan, and he used charcoal that day. He came in second brisket, right behind barbecue, which is unbelievable. And he ended up fourth overall. And we are as proud as we could be about Mike, because I think that was Mike's day of reckoning right there. Where he actually truly, truly became a pit master that day. Because he had to overcome all the obstacles along with everything that was going on in that field that day, and did just a sparkling job. All I could do for him was, you know, the best I could with the marinades and the injections and what was going on. And then, you know, I had to be at work at like 5 o'clock in the morning or something stupid like that. And so, you know, midnight, I'm leaving Myrtle Beach at midnight after everything's all, you know, chicken meat up and prepping it all up. At midnight, I'm traveling home. And so he had to take care of the cook. And we have people that cook with us, but it's unfortunate that the other ones that cook with us aren't necessarily dedicated to the cooking process. They're more dedicated to the beer process. And that's okay. But unfortunately, Mike and I do handle most of the cooking that's going on, and we kind of shift in and out. That's what Mike and I do. He's up while I'm asleep, and I'm asleep while he's up, which is something that as you're putting your team together, and as you're looking at what's going on, you need to make sure that somewhere along the line, you get sleep. You cannot perform at your highest level on Saturday morning with no sleep. You have to be able to get sleep somewhere along the line. So if that means that, you know, you figure out how your cooker works, you can get away from it for 2 or 3 hours, all you have to do is reset the melatonin. Anybody who knows about jet lag and all the rest of that stuff, you have to reset your brain. Let your brain know that you've been to bed. That takes about 2 hours to do that, unless you want to take the vitamins, the melatonin, and everything else that goes along with it, and reset your body clock, which your body clock has to reset. When you reset your body clock, you become more alert, and that's pretty much what it's all about. So you have to find some time to get some sleep. But that's how Mike and I work it. He's asleep while I'm awake, and I'm awake while he's asleep, and we just go through the whole thing. When I asked Russ when he was doing his presentation, when do you sleep? He said, that's what Matt's with Matt for. Matt's a nightman. There's no doubt about it. He is Russ's nightman, and Russ goes to sleep. So,
Martin's kind of reversion.
Most of them. And I've always had a nightman. Bob was my nightman when I was with Common Interest. Any of you know Bob? Bob could run a cooker down. I think he owned stocking cores like We had a rule for Bob, no drinking beer before 9 o'clock in the morning. So he would be like, he would drink until like 8, you know, in the morning. And then we'd send him to bed, because don't turn in case he'd be up till noon. We'd send him to bed, and then he'd kind of like stumble out of the camper at about, you know, 11:30.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, we'll go back to the brisket. Enough stories. when you're looking at a brisket, you're looking at something, when you're cooking meat, you want it to be able to cook evenly. Okay? When you're turning in flat meat. Brisket is set up in two different ways. It's two different muscles actually together. There's the point, which is this piece up here, sometimes called the deckle. That's the correct word for it. And then there's the flat. Right here is where it splits. So this muscle actually sits on top of this muscle, and they kind of sit like this, basically, kind of crooked like that. Okay. This piece down here, like I said, is the flat. But what I'm looking for when I'm cooking is to get something that will cook evenly. I'm turning in point meat. Excuse me. I want something that's thicker. And you can see how this kind of drops off down to the end down here. This piece right here is totally useless to me. It's just not going to cut. There's nothing there. There's nothing to show. This piece is better, but it still does the same thing. This piece is even all the way down. You can see that it's got a good, it's good and thick. So I'm looking for something that's, as you look at them, see how this slopes up high? So does this one, it comes up high? This one is much closer to the where the meat is. So when I'm choosing something that doesn't have a high crown on it, because this is going to cook more as a unit than these are. Because this is, obviously this thin part down here is going to get done before this thick part over here does. So I'm going through the meat case, and I'll go to Sam's, and when the lady sees me at Sam's, she knows I'm going for brisket. She'll just bring two or three cases out when we go through. And I'll go through and I'll pick, you know, what I want out of those briskets. If you have an outlet, if you're a caterer and you're lucky enough to have an outlet, you can buy cases of brisket. You just have to cook them and serve them to your clients, which is the ultimate in my opinion, to be able to do that. So, we're going to choose our brisket. We're going to try to find the best that we can. We're going to try to find one that's even and square. And that is even and square. This is pointy. This is pointy. So if I was going to look at what I've got going on here, I'm choosing this brisket.
Do you ever cook more than one in the competition?
I always cook two.
You take parts out of both to turn in?
No. Always out of one.
Okay.
When you pick them up, they're going to kind of be bendy like that. That's what you want. Even more floppy, see? That one's not too floppy, is it? So guess what? That's tender. That's not. Just by first look at it. So I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to make sure that it's bendy and floppy and loose. And I'm going to know that that's a pretty... That's a bet for me right there. I'm going to try to find two like that. We used to cook three in a contest, and the crazy thing about brisket is no two are the same. We can use exactly the same rubs, exactly the same injections, put them right next to each other in the cooker, and one is always better than the other. So what we were finding was that one was always better than the other two. We were throwing them away. Or actually not throwing them away, but we were discarding two. So if one is always better than the other one, then by my crazy logic, why cook three? Because two are just going to go, just take the best out of the two if you don't. So these briskets right here probably go $35 anyway. Isn't that kind of cool?
That's cool.
So that's my choice. Same size, same shape, same everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or as close as we can.
Two snake rivers,
you're talking $200.
What about this? You can buy just regular brisket flats.
You can buy flats. And I'll tell you why I don't cook flats. There's this piece underneath of this, that's underneath of this deckle right here. Fat's all in the deckle of this meat right here. This will be useless to me because it will dry out. What I'm looking for is this piece right here. This is going to be my money meat, is what we're going to call it. For the rest of the day, you'll hear money meat come out of my mouth. That's my money meat, only because it's protected. And it is well within the bounds of enough meat to put in a box. All right, every brisket I've ever dealt with has got this gray crap on it right here. That's freezer burn or meat burn or whatever you want to call it. We're going to cut that off. This piece right here is called the kernel, what I call the kernel. It is nothing but a piece of fat. We're going to take that out, okay? But here's what you got to do before you even get started. You look at it, and you'll notice that the grain of the brisket runs this like this. See it? When you cut this piece of meat, it has to cut against the grain, directly against the grain. So if you cut it here the way that you think you might cut it, that ain't right. Because it's going to get stringy in it. And it'll pull apart badly. Okay? You're going to cut it straight down this angle right here. Okay? The distance between here and here is too long. Or should be too long. We'll find out in a minute. You have to be able to put this in a 9x9 to-go box. Okay? And if it's going to go in a 9x9 to-go box, you only have 9 inches to deal with. So look at here. I've got my tape. If I put that on there, 9 inches is from here to here is 9 inches. Oh, behold, it's yellow. Right? So if I'm going to put this in here right now, I'm already too wide. True? So I have to find a way. You don't want to trim this to put it in your box. It needs to go right straight in your box and right off of this brisket. So as we go up, we'll run the tape measure on up and we'll say, it's too wide there. And we'll go on down and then it gets to be the right size. And that's good. So I got my tape measure. And I'll start kind of working with it. And getting all the crap off of it.
When you measure, what do you allow for shrinkage?
I cut them all at 8.5. Because then I know it's going to fit in a box. Seasoning will not go through fat. So I'm trimming all this off. As best as I can. Y'all are so lucky.
Jack, I noticed all three of those briskets were left-handed, left-sided briskets. Is there a reason for that? Just luck of the draw.
I think that was luck of the draw. I didn't pull any out. I don't really look at the left-handed, right-handed thing, Seth. I think that's luck. There is a difference between left-hand side and right-hand side. And the guys who study cows will tell you that a cow always sits on his right side, is it?
Sleeps on his left side.
He's on his left side. So when he gets up off the ground to do his movement after he gets done sleeping, he uses the right side to push himself up with, and therefore that piece of meat is going to be less tender than the other side. You can take that for what it's worth. It's probably true. No telling. You could subscribe to that. Do you subscribe to it, sir?
Yes. More times than not, it's a very tender brisket.
You find that it's more important how tender it is in the Cyrovac before you open it?
I do.
How good it's going to be? You never notice that?
Well, because I subscribe to the fact that the left brisket is more tender than the right, I start with the left brisket, so I know, in my mind, it's more tender to begin with.
That's the start, yeah.
And then it's there.
But, you know, I don't know, my biggest thing is how flexible it is in the Cyrovac. As a rule,
after that, yeah.
After that. I can't. I get right enough mixed up. If it's on R and L on them, so I can't really. I don't remember which one turns.
He's
which.
He's talking like me now. Yeah. Sorry, I knew what he did though earlier.
Did he mark it with an R and L?
Me?
No, it's a Jack.
No, I don't. I never said this. That's a set. I'm like you. I can't. If it,
the butcher probably don't know.
It don't say R&L on it.
Butchers now don't even know what a brisket is. A lot of the places.
Most of them know. This is a meat cutter version of Russ's flexible bone knife. Necessary for this kind of work. What I want to do is to kind of trim off all of the excess fat. I was watching that's a Forster roast. You don't see many of those around anymore. I made a little bit of that.
You're using that.
small portion of the turnips. And you can see that this particular piece cuts right here. And this line of fat runs all the way down, all the way through to the other side. Comes out right underneath here. So this is sitting on top of this muscle. Got it? Questions?
How far are you going to dig into that fat? Are you going to stop it on the side where you're cutting in?
On the cap?
Or when you're taking those pockets, you go right. How far do you go through?
I try to get the white fat out, the hard white fat. But I don't get too far into this. Hard white fat really doesn't do away with that much good.
Yeah, none of it's going to melt, basically.
No, the white fat doesn't melt. And I'll flip it over, and you'll notice that the cap on this side is pretty strong. So, you don't need to have all this. It's certainly not necessary, so I'll start shaving it. And I'll shave it to about a quarter inch, half inch, as best as I can. Because that's going to do nothing but suck up the well-needed DTUs that I need to cook this piece of meat. Couldn't believe it. I got the biggest one in the case. We're gonna lose, we're gonna lose big.
I like the attitude, though.
Mm-hmm. Now I can't get him away from going to Walmart and buying the biggest damn one in the case. Guys, cooking meat goes by ounces per pound or pounds per hour, basically. So if you're cooking a 12-pound brisket, it's going to go about an hour and a pound or something along those lines. I don't know what the actual number is. So you've got to pick a 12-pound brisket. You're going to cook in about 12 hours. You've got a 15-pound brisket. You're looking at 15 hours. And that doesn't change. That's just fat. I subscribe to low and slow methods. I do not subscribe to power cooking. I'm working with power cooking right now as a cook. But I don't think that power cooking allows me to develop the flavors that I want to have in a piece of meat. Now, whether or not a judge knows the difference between it, probably not. And I think the judges are, you know, I think that the whole Snake River Farms thing is all about being a yuppie, you know? I'm serious. Oh, I had Snake River. I had Wagyu brisket today. It was so good. I couldn't tell the difference between a Wagyu anything. Come on.
I tend to believe there's a difference. I don't like the difference, actually.
You don't like the mouthfeel?
I don't like the mouthfeel of the super. I like a prime brisket. I was able to, a couple weeks ago, was able to cook a couple prime flats that were as fun as thick as that whole thing is under your fingers. And just super nice. Those were really nice. And they cooked up nice.
One time I did cook a steak with a farm brisket, I threw away the point. Too much fat. I mean, just honest. But the flat was good. I like the flat, but the point threw away.
I've always been a low and slow guy. I won't tell you that when we go cater and we're cooking for money, that we don't power cook everything. Because that's just a matter of how much time you're willing to invest in the money that you're going to get back on the other end. There's nothing wrong with power cooking. I power cook butts like you wouldn't believe. And I mean, really stuck it to them. Cook them at 320, 325. You know, you can get them done in about 6 hours. The difference between that is 6 hours time invested into X amount of dollars coming back versus, you know, people don't know the difference anymore. Let's put it that way. Really, they don't. All right, that's pretty well trimmed up, huh? We got most of that out of there. You can keep this fat if you want. I talked about grinding up sausage the other day, or earlier in the day with the rib tips and so on and so forth. That makes a good fat for your sausage.
Yeah, you stop a lot sooner than I do, Truman.
You get right down in it?
I think, yeah. Before I can pull that the flat back.
Do you get the silver skin off of it?
Yeah, I think you're a play knife. And I'll trim under where the left hand, just knife to go right under, it's almost apart. So when I go to take it apart, the point separates naturally for me, it just falls right off.
You need to give a knife something.
Me?
Yeah.
I let Mike start blowing my guns.
Well, I said Mike close to me.
What's that?
So I said a mic close to me to sharpen my knives.
He's got one of them machines. It's an awesome machine. I tell you what, we'll do a little experiment because we got six briskets to work with. A little later on, we'll get Buzzy and I'll let him get in the town on a brisket. Maybe you can teach us all of us.
Sure.
You willing to do that, Buzz?
Oh, sure. And you'll see why I have my partner turn the meat from the cook. Except I do it at home. I do everything. I think the biggest thing you can learn about going to contests is to make it simple.
Simple.
Everything gets done at home. You know, Monday night, it's chicken. Vacuum, cook, do it, vacuum pack it, freeze it. Ribs is the only thing I don't trim ahead of time. You know, I try to buy already trimmed ribs if I can, but you buy them single in the styro bag sometimes. Unless you got to do at the contest.
The more time you have to drink beer?
Well, that or just to relax and be there for what you're there for.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I wanted to do.
You can tell we got most of the white fat off, majority of the silver skin off.
When does the rain start changing?
That grain goes right up that way. This grain you see is going up.
What are these?
That's grain right there.
Yeah.
It's all grain.
And when you were slicing, which I know you got to cut a grain.
Catch the grain. Where my knife went up there. A lot of cooks will notch it right there. And they know they'll take that piece off, and they'll know that's the way they got to go. I'm not so. I don't know what I want to say. It's stupid. And I can't figure out how to brand these meat goes. But there are those that have that difficulty.
Yeah, I do.
I do. A lot of guys will cut that tip off. I look for that tip because I know that piece I would have cut off. It's kind of around that way. That's just me. All right, that's the thick end, that's the thin end. So if I'm going to save it, I'm going to save this side, right? So as we run our square, you run our tape, you can see that we're too long. And that's actually the thin end there. Thick end there, so we're going to cut it.
Pretty good, actually.
Gotta take some off. Okay.
So choose wisely, man.
Am I throwing an answer in there?
I tried it in brisket once. You can't chew it. Just a piece of.
You can't
have your teeth. Even a piece of rotten. Even a piece of real thin slice like that. I tried it once, just because. And it's too good until you cook it, or make hamburger out of it. Makes great hamburger. Really do.
Okay, there is no. We're going yellow to yellow. That's 9 inches. So there is no place along this grain that I am wider than 9 inches. So when we put this in, when we take this off and we go to cut it, put it in the box, I'm not going to be like, oh, that won't fit, and I got to cut a piece off, because that's going to make it unsymmetrical when it goes in the box, and it needs to be symmetrical when it goes in. Now, I know fellas that'll kind of, you know, bust this down a little bit to kind of get more of a hump look. I don't know if that's good or not. I don't know if it's necessary, because as it cooks, it's going to kind of shrink up into its own thing anyway. That is the art of trimming up the brisket. It doesn't take long, really. I actually kind of like doing this. Toolbox and see if there's a strainer in there. There should be. This is called a dial mat. Now there will be a young man here. Thank you. There will be a fellow here tomorrow from Cooking Out that will be glad to sell you one of these. This is like the granddaddy, mac daddy of injectors. It's a lot more intimidating than it actually is. Works on ounces on the back here. You can dial in how many ounces you want to shoot at one time. Works relatively easy. I like it because it has a series of needles on the end. So when I'm injecting, I'm actually not just injecting out the end. I'm actually injecting like six or eight or nine or whatever it is, different spots. So I've turned a lot of people on to that thing. It's worth the $50. Pay for it. I guarantee.
Does the size of the needle join the meat makes a difference?
Yeah, actually, Buzz and I talked about that at length last night. And the interesting thing about dead meat is that it won't heal. And when you're poking a hole in the dead meat, it's not going to re-heal itself back up again. I found that to be most...
Yeah, pork, it doesn't really matter what you use the pork. But with beef, you know, it's, I use the best needle, 14 gauge.
You can go to the veterinary supply place and get all the 14 gauge needles you need from my gallon.
Will it fit into an injector?
That's bigger.
You can buy the injector. It goes up.
I think so. That's a lot. It's probably even bigger. 14 is something my wife carries on the ambulance.
A little bit of the.
So that's probably. I think actually that's actually the
29 gauge is a diabetic needle. So that's twice as big as a diabetic. Yeah, that's small.
Yeah, it's 20. Well, she told me that 14 gauge is what she uses. She pumps to the heart right away. That's a size needle. I think it's small. I think it's smaller than that. But
it is smaller. Than that.
He's good. I got no problem with a regular old needle. Mm-hmm. I like that better. I don't know why. I just do. The difference in this is there's a technique involved with using this style of needle. You draw it up in there, then you kind of push it in. You give a little pump. You pull it out and you push it in. And you're just having to pump a little bit more often, I guess. That's the style of that. With a Boston butt, it's the same thing.
Have you seen the one that's a pump-up sprayer that's got the little vial?
Yes, I have.
I got bought one of those.
That works good for pork.
I got a video of one of those on my website. The guy put a gallon and a half of injection in two briskets. I don't know how he did it. Of course, some of it leaked out, but...
That's how I did it.
You don't go into the top, huh?
I will.
There it is, just like that.
I bet he uses that on his Boston nuts.
Yeah. Dude, you got a lot of meat, too. That's handy.
Yeah. We got a nap dick we're going to use in the hall. That's my favorite. All right, you'll notice that I'm only going in with the grain on the brisket. And that is a technique that I use because if you go across the grain, when you cut, it's going to leave tracks.
I've been having that problem.
So that's because you're shooting this way.
Part of that, and part of your needle track thing is from dirty needles.
Really?
That's a Busco will swear to that. It's just there's a little bit of contaminant in the needle. And just not as sterile as it really should be. And that's what you're getting a lot sometimes a track from, is from a dirty needle.
How much liquid you inject?
Usually about a cup and a half.
Okay.
I usually use a red cup for this. I carry a red cup specifically to do injections.
Like red, like clear cups?
Yeah.
That's what I use.
I don't recommend styrofoam cups. Bad idea to put a needle through the bottom of a styrofoam cup while you're...
I actually use like stadium cups, like Clemson, Carolina cups. Mm-hmm. So,
probably works pretty good.
Trying to get it on me.
If you can get away with it.
That's right. Well, those injection marks do look horrible when you cut your
meat.
I've read it. I've not done as many briskets as maybe Jackson, but I've never had a brisket have track marks as long as I followed shooting them with the grain.
Yeah, I've never had.
Never had a problem with tracks.
Never.
I think, too, the longer you let it sit, it helps as well, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't just shoot it and throw it on the
flipper. Well, I never. Well, I use
injections hours. I don't put it. I like to do this as soon as I can when I get to the site. But as soon as I get my meat inspected, I usually do brisket because I like this to sit a while. I don't put a lot of injection into the flat or into the point because all I'm going to do with the point is make burnt ends out of it. So. It doesn't need to have we're going to intensify the flavor of the beef that way. The reason that we're injecting is to make it taste beefy. That's the whole idea behind the whole thing. As you cook brisket and as you get better at it, you're going to find out that brisket comes in two different flavors. Beefy, steaky type of flavor, kind of prime ribish, and pot roast. Pot roast is trash. And you will be able to tell it straight up when you cut your knife and taste it. You'll know if it's pot roast or not. If you got pot roast, you ain't winning. That's just the way it is.
Gotta be good pot roast.
Better be. It's damn good pot roast.
Don Wilson said it to me one time. I came to the restaurant and said, damn, this tastes like pot roast. He said, the question not is whether it's pot roast or not, is it good pot roast?
Is it good pot roast?
So how long is the brisket?
As long as I can. The meat inspectors will come around, and you know, depending on what time you get there, and depending on what exactly is happening. I'll let them sit as long as I can. I mean, there's no
24 hours, not too long.
No. As long as you can let it sit, you're not going to let it sit 24 hours because when you show up on site, you're going to do it in the backyard, maybe. But 24 hours is not too long.
When we get to a site, we send Matt down the inspector, bring it on site, inspect it, and restart.
That's the flavor. It has nothing to do with final emissions.
Yeah, I got the phosphates are going through there and allowing the moisture.
You used spot?
Yeah, we used butchers today.
Oh, okay.
Butchers, I thought it wasn't going to do.
I know. I was just saying.
Did you use butchers in that mix?
Yes.
So if you're injecting it,
it's part of your recipe.
If you're injecting it, you've got the residue coming out of the water. If you're injecting it in the bowl, why not leave the residue in the bowl with the meal?
Sure, okay.
Yeah,
the brisket rub. We'll throw some on it. Use this first. This is my go-to brisket rub, Montreal steak seasoning, Canadian steak seasoning, whatever you want to call it. This is what I generally throw on brisket. You can get, there's a thousand good rubs out there. There really is. All you got to do is make sure what you're matching up, your rub and your sauce and your injection are all matching up well. That's pretty much the bottom line between all of this. When I was telling you the story about going to Myrtle Beach with the, which brisket, I bought the biggest one and so on and so forth. There was no Canadian steak in the Walmart we were in. It wasn't on the shelf. So I looked at Mike and I said, hey, ever use this? And I pulled some stuff called Chicago steak seasoning off the shelf. He's like, I never tried it before. So I kind of cracked it open there and kind of peeled it and back, stuck my finger in it. Which probably isn't the right thing to do at Walmart, because if I didn't like it, I'm sure I would have put it back up on the shelf and let somebody else buy it. But it tasted pretty good, so that's what we bought, and that's what we use that day. It's pretty tasty.
Did I have a lot of salt?
What?
Yes.
Yeah, Montreal steak? That's full of salt.
Do not use sea salt, please. It will not dissolve. Or crunchy, salty biscuit.
I like to get it kind of wet and just let me kind of dip mine. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wishes to try that, you're welcome to put it in a cup or something.
What do you use for liquid in that?
Give it a try. Water and beef paste. Then we go ahead and we give it a good coat.
And you go ahead as soon as you get it injected and
yep.
Just like you're doing now.
Just right. This is what I do.
Okay. That Butcher Barbecue keeps talking about is actually a competition team. Barbecue took number one in brisket and KCBS, and Butcher takes second. And we got an honor page with Seth on, and Jack and the president will be on there after this weekend. But
awesome.
We have a link. Just go on Barbecue Superstars page of honor, and Butcher Barbecue's got a link right there, and you can go and get everything you need.
Yeah, Dave Busaka's a good guy.
Yeah, he is
really a good guy. I don't know much about the Coslow guy. I understand he's a pretty good fellow, but. David Busaka is a good guy. David Busaka has supported this class for a long time. That's why I'm using his. You know, he sent me everything I needed and let me know what was going on. You know, helped me out. And,
he doesn't make up nice little sample packs as nice as some. And that's the only problem I have with it. I buy it and repackage it.
All right, you can see I put a pretty good size coating on there, just like that. Now, I don't do anything with this side, because that side's not going to do anything for me anyway. That's going to go away one way or another. I'm using this as my shield. Okay, I cook offset, so I have to have a shield of some kind to be able to keep my meat from burning up. So I'm going to turn this towards the fire, and it's going to be my fire shield, more or less. This side of the meat will never see the radiant heat coming off of the fire. That just means what I do. Generally a good rule of thumb. If you're cooking offset down, you can flip because convection goes across the top of the cooker. So you can flip if you want to. I like this to develop a little bit. If you're using the stumps cookers down, if you're using the backwoods cookers, fat up. Because backwoods cookers, their theory behind their heat is the heat goes up through the walls of the cookers and back down from the top. So the radiant heat is coming down on the top of this person. That true, Buzz?
Yes, sir.
The heat plate on that lane. The heat plate coming up.
I don't think it would matter for you on that lane.
I was going to say, turn on my equipment on the lane. I think that's just the fat down and let it cook. They're going to cover that fat as well. As they say, that plate is pumping. It's here.
Close. We're almost done. Looks good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do you think?
Then we'll put it up.
All right. Now comes the barbecue superstar trick of the week.
There you go.
You wouldn't think that a guy with my socioeconomic status would be sitting around beef. This comes from a nugget that I got tossed a while ago. I used to cook with a guy, I used to cook next to a fellow, and y'all may know him or may not know him, named Scott McDaniel. Scott McDaniel was from Smoke Shack. And he is now cooking with, I think it's called SmokingAFatty.com or something like that. He's still Smoke Shack, but he has this big, huge barbecue trailer. It's about 45 feet of 50-foot trailer. And Scott taught me a lot about barbecue. And was the one that actually, when I was feeling down the dumps because I couldn't cook food worth the crap in the barbecue game, he kept me involved and kept me focused. And gave me probably the best advice I've ever gotten from a barbecue cook. Man, you got to cook more than twice a year to do well. That's pretty much what I came out. And unfortunately, when you're talking about, you know, I mean, I was broke, man. I'm just a guy trying to make a living, you know. And you start doing these contests, and it's $1,000 to go out there and do it. Realistically, it's $1,000 to go do it. So, you know, how am I going to tell the wife that I've got to have $1,000 to go to a barbecue contest? It is not something she wants to explain to your wife. Guarantee it. Because I can guarantee you that she might say yes the first time and you come home broke. And she might say yes the second time and you come home broke. And she won't get a third time. I guarantee you.
Unless
she's involved. Well, the good thing about what happened to us was, so we started cooking more often, and as we cooked, we started winning and doing better, and coming in top fives and more top threes, and started getting some championships under our belt. So we started to create our own budget. And once you start creating your own budget, you can really win, you know, unless you're fortunate to be able to pick up a sponsor. Now, I'm all in favor of sponsorships. If any of y'all have any money and want to go ahead and support Mike's Catering and what they're all about, we'll be happy to take your money and we'll make you feel comfortable as you can be on Friday night in the barbecue contest. However, sponsorships in this day and age are tough. They are hard to pick up. And even, you know, Mark Street Saloon coming all this, you know, this time through, and Mike helping us out a little bit, and Smoke and Coals, Sauces and Rubs,
poking in a little bit with some product. John Getzinger, if he's here, he hooked it with some chicken rub that we're going to give away. So, you know, those things all help. But sponsorships are tough right now. I envy Russ for having his sponsorship.
Yeah, because somebody just sponsor ice, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be great, too.
We're trying to work out a deal with Bill's Liquor right now.
I can get Bill Cape's beer. And I can get
Bill's Liquors. All Mike wants is six handles of Maker's Mark and all the beer we can drink. He's close. He is. But he has no idea.
Okay, folks. What we're going to try to do, really, is a competition chicken prep. And Publix is always number one when you're buying competition chicken. Now, Springer Mountain Farms, organic chicken has gotten very popular because they don't have as much fat on the back. And, of course, we're going to be using our Frederick Dick knives from www.125west.com. And we appreciate their sponsorship. And I tell you what, I'm really impressed with these knives. They really do a good job. And I think our primary knife today is going to be our little 3.5-inch. This thing's dangerous. 3.5-inch knives. And all I know to do is get a chicken and let's go. Well, everything about Publix is clean, nice looking, and very professional. I got to give Publix a lot of credit. They know how to pack their stuff. They know how to handle their food, that's for sure. Now, when you look at a thigh, which this is definitely not an organic thigh. This is definitely a had some added